No playing.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the grim darkness of the far future where there is only war. I am Dylan.
And I'm Molly, and I don't know what's happening.
Is our third just going to remain silent? Okay. Today we're going to talk about chimichangas and why we think they're delicious.
Hell yeah. Go first. I've been waiting for this conversation. Can we talk about Deadpool 2?
No, I haven't seen it.
He's got I only want to talk about Mexican food.
He has to be part of this conversation.
No. We're going to talk about Wrath and Glory instead.
What about...
Do you like whole beans or refried beans?
Beans, yes. Correct.
All of the above. That's
good. I am a nightmare when I go to Chipotle. It's just like, what do you want on it? And I just say, yes.
All the things. I know guac costs extra. Thanks. I'm aware queso is extra. Thanks.
I make this massive, abominable thing that is impossible to wrap.
Can you please double wrap
it? And you start making like double-sized tortillas specifically for me.
I legit dated a dude that asked for double wrapped every time he went.
It's a good song.
As opposed to me, where I just get like a bowl and then I ask for like two extra tortillas because I love tearing them suckers apart and eating them. They're so squishy in the best way. Yes.
Warm.
This one's awesome.
Squishy.
Squishy. Slap it in.
Okay.
I shouldn't have started a bit. I should know by now that if I say any shit that's off topic, we're immediately going to go down this 20 minute.
You started talking about food, okay?
Hey, you're talking about rabbit holes. We can't avoid the subject. You know what has us all.
Teeth don't match the bite.
No.
At the Alice in Wonderland?
Yes, exactly. Think about where that leads to.
Leads to being late for a very important date.
The Matrix has you.
You want to take the red pill or this Xanax I found on the ground outside?
Apparently a buttload of Xanax.
Sure it's the Xanax. I know what Xanax looks like.
A whole handful. Because reality is...
Anyways... we're going to be talking about the different tiers of play in Wrath and Glory because this is something I find very interesting. So like in most tabletop RPGs, you've got like, oh, I'm level 7. At level 7, I have access to this kind of gear and enemies of appropriate level and blah, 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 blah. There are no level ups in Wrath and Glory.
Oh.
That ain't how this works. It's like, there's a lot of systems you can find these days where it's just like you get an amount of experience and you spend enough experience to get an upgrade of some kind. And at that point, it's like, how do you keep track of like what your encounter should look like? How do you know what enemies are appropriate for how much experience you guys have? Because there's not like a hard level system. And Wrath and Glory, I think, hit the nail on the head with their tier system, where it's your experience is going to be slow coming in no matter what. So you're not ever going to get like stupidly strong in comparison to the rest of your tier. It's all about like, this is the tier you're playing at. This is the basic kind of archetype you can be and kind of the baseline power level. And you just kind of build from there. And then as things... My goodness, could you please not play with my amiibos? Those are collectibles, sir. Little man.
This cat over here is very perturbed, but I want to hold his hand so bad.
Holding cat paws is such a delightful experience.
He's like, ugh. Oh, don't touch me.
Ugh. Yeah, like, the different tiers you can be at in Wrath and Glory just kind of give you a generalized idea of what level of strength your character is going to be at, but also kind of the scale of your adventure. Whereas a tier one character can be something like a basic guardsman or a ganger from a hive world or something. they're not going to be doing any kind of save the world type stuff. You're cannon fodder. If you're even part of like a special group for any reason, being given some special assignment to do this special thing, it's not going to be like, I will find the artifact that will empower our psychos to be able to erect a shield to save the entire hot. No, it's more like you're fetching coffee for the local inquisitorial acolyte, not even the full inquisitor, just one of his acolytes. But his coffee, boy, doesn't it come only fresh from the deepest parts of the death world in the jungles of Catachan. And you are going on this very specific coffee run, and you're not expected to survive. It's just going to be a pleasant surprise if you happen to.
Sounds like that guy either doesn't like coffee very much, or he is just full of himself. How could he tell the difference between just going to Dunkin' Donuts?
It's because Dunkin' Donuts doesn't exist 40,000 years in the future.
Do you know what? Who's to say, considering our corporate overlords and how they're going?
Exactly. Dunkin' will own a big army.
The Emperor of Man says so, because there's really not corporations.
I mean, Dunkin' already owns Massachusetts. That's like owning an army, basically.
That's not hard to accomplish. I could probably march into Massachusetts and capture it tomorrow.
Now you're thinking of really Rhode tried. Island.
Capture with Rhode what, Island's dude?
Significantly
what
you smaller. Got?
Either one. I just like, if I show up to Massachusetts with like a pocket knife and gumption, I'm pretty sure I could conquer the state. I don't think it would take me.
You conquer with that ass.
I don't have an ass.
Yeah, you do. You're sitting on it right now. Are you Hank Hill?
One ass. Yeah, I'm pretty Hank Hill.
You got a you got an ass supplement?
I need a gluteal orthotic.
I take my propane strictly into the butt cheek.
Propane's not only clean burning, she's a dirty girl.
I'm clean. I don't do drugs, except clean burning propane.
Clean.
Ace the meat, not the heat.
We're going pro-green.
Ace?
So, tier 1 archetypes. Things you can be in a tier 1 game. And note that these are the basic archetypes. Of course, there's like lots of room for homebrew and stuff like that. But you can be a sister hospitaller, which is one of the Adeptus Sororitas. They're like kind of a sister of battle, but they're more focused on like healing. Not like magically, but like actual medicine.
Adeptus.
But more in like that combat medic kind of way, where it's not really like, hey, we're going to fix your broken arm and make sure you're okay. It's more like, we're going to make sure your last moments at least are minimal amounts of pain before we put the bullet in your head and put you out of your misery. Kind of healing. They're very good at interrogation because they know where all of your vital points are. Points. All your vital points.
That hustler under between the hatches.
All your vital ports.
Yeah, they know where the admec ports are. The holy USB drive. You could be a ministorum priest. Just a priest.
Just a priest.
That's it. Yeah, just a priest.
Not like a witch religion, just in general.
Well, there's only one religion in the Imperium, and that is worship of the God Emperor of Mankind. If you do not worship the God of Emperor, holy shit, every episode, if you do not worship the God Emperor of Mankind, you are summarily executed for your heresy.
Wait. Are we doing a 40K thing? I thought this was a whole...
Is.
Okay, I had no idea, because we did not go over this before we started this episode.
Oh man, if only someone listened to the podcast.
Hey!
Hey!
I got stuff I gotta do, and my brain can't focus for longer than 5 minutes at a time. I'm already looking at a book.
Yeah, I noticed.
Mm-hmm.
You're reading Classical Mechanics while we're recording a podcast.
Yeah, because I'm a fucking nerd, okay?
I knew that already. This podcast is about tabletop RPGs. Duh, you're a fucking nerd.
You guys are fucking geeks, okay? I'm a nerd. We're different, okay? No.
All right, you hold the fuck on. We gotta fight. We gotta go in the parking lot. There's gonna be pistols at dawn with you, Molly.
You're too far away, man.
We just talked about me marching to Massachusetts overnight. Don't tempt me.
That's good combo.
Oh, yeah, you remember? It was just like the Bite of 87.
We're so talking about how his...
Was that the Bite of 87?
Lack of ass wasn't really helping.
Yeah, I mean, his gluteal prosthetics.
Yeah, from
orthotic.
He needs propass.
Orthotic. I guess the prosthetics would be attached.
Yeah. I'm not like getting a fake ass attached.
Gluteo orthodontics.
No, you're just hanging them in your pants.
Yeah.
It's butt cheeks.
This is my
dental butt cheeks. Dental dam for
this
your
is my removable badonkadonk.
Removadonk.
Mm. Mm. I wish I could do the same thing for my boobs. I could put them in the dishwasher to clean them.
Me too.
So, the third archetype is the Imperial Guardsman. The average Imperial Guardsman gets, like, what, 2 weeks of training? And they slap a gun in their hand and they're like, have at it.
You're part
of the
army.
Like the police.
Pretty much, like, the Imperium's approach to military tactics is throw bodies at a problem until it goes away.
Just like the Russian army in World War I/II.
Slash the current one that they're losing.
I have a lot of just random things. Okay, keep going.
And the funny thing about that is there's so many people in the Imperium that strategy genuinely works. They just have that many people to throw at any given problem.
Plus, they really do not care about life, if I remember correctly, about 40K.
They very much don't.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, it's honestly in their best interest to throw away as many lives as possible because they don't have the resources to support that many people. Oof is the word you're looking for.
That's also a very political statement if we're talking about these things.
Well, again, like, did we talk about this on the podcast? But 40K is, at least in the way it was originally written, is very heavy political satire.
Yeah. Just like a lot of things, actually.
But the problem came with a whole bunch of people who took those extreme political views, which were meant to be like poking fun at extremists, and started taking them literally, and then polluted the pool of people who play this game. Ooh,
just like flat earthers, actually. Exactly like flat earthers.
Inquisitorial acolytes are subordinate to inquisitors. They have some amount of authority, but not a whole lot. Like, you got to really be a full inquisitor. To have that kind of I flash my badge and you do whatever the fuck I tell you or your entire planet gets nuked kind of authority.
Nice.
Ooh,
it's cool.
But the acolytes are like in training to become inquisitors, at least ostensibly. A lot of them are just going to be around to be servants for an inquisitor. An inquisitorial sage, which is like an information gatherer for the Inquisition. Kind of their job to put out feelers and get info and figure out where the heresy's happening so they can put a stop to it. A ganger, random gang member from a random hive, who knows? You're just a dude who happens to have a gun, and that's your character. Is just yourself, but with a gun, apparently.
Is that just, like, the untrained version? Because the other one was a 2-week, like, seminar style.
Yeah, like, that's, like, they're at least ostensibly part of the military. They're like, you've got some flak armor, you got a helmet, you got a las rifle, have at it, soldier. A ganger's just like, listen, I found this pipe, I found some bullets, and I found this, I don't know, I think an orc dropped it here at some point, and it shoots the bullets somehow. Anyway, I'm gonna go start taking everyone else's food to have more. And that's what a ganger is.
Mm-hmm.
They're just mean. They're mean because they can get away with it.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Because they're desperate, very likely.
Hive worlds are not nice places to live. Like, it's, you can work and get some food that way and get some money that way, but it's like, if you're really gonna prosper on a hive world, you're gonna step on everyone else to elevate yourself, because it's the only way to make it happen.
Nice.
Dang.
An Eldar Corsair, which is space elf, but kind of pirate also, but like a low ranking one, or a standard orc boy. The thing to take from all of these tier one characters is that they are cannon fodder. They are there to be thrown at a problem and hope that it goes away, but you're not expected to have tactics. You're not going to get good war gear. It's just like, we're going to find enough of these dudes to throw at a problem until it goes away. And that's your entire lot. It's to die in service of somebody else. This is not the, I'm going to save the world character. This is a I hope I live till tomorrow character.
Correct.
And they're the kinds of enemies they'll be fighting are not going to be the super big important named characters. You're just going to be fighting some dudes. And you're going to be probably struggling against most of those dudes as well. A thing that they do, like instead of it being like, oh, this enemy is this level, is it gives kind of a, this enemy will be considered this kind of enemy at this tier. So something like a random, let's say, demonette, that would be like an elite to a tier one, but could just be a standard troop to a tier two game because of the difference in power. Whereas a single demonette would be a very difficult fight for a group of like four tier one characters. You could probably take four or five of them as any given tier two character group and have no trouble with it.
What is the power difference between a level one character and say an NPC? I think they sometimes talk about that in like D&D. Like a random townsperson like, versus like some adventurer starting out.
Well, these all are basically random townspeople in essence. Like the only thing that's really going to separate any of these tier one characters from just a random person, like a random menial worker in a hive world, is going to be the fact that they have like a gun and a vest.
They got a pipe.
That's really about it. Yeah, like they got a pipe to bash someone over the head with. That's really going to be about the only difference. It's also, more of a difference in attitude than anything else.
You said orc boy. Are they children? Or is that just you saying that with an eye?
No. So that's like literally the way the orcs talk is in like this really exaggerated Cockney British accent.
So, they all talks like this, you grot. You fragging gits.
So when you don't talk like... The orcs don't say, this group is my man. They're like,
this lot is me boys.
So
standard orc is just called a boy.
Boy.
It's just all they're called. And they don't like boy is very like, just kind of like generalized. Orcs don't actually have genders because they are in fact fungus and reproduce asexually.
Dude.
Oh, that reminds me of Shadows Over Loathing or that other stick game, the Western one.
West of Loathing,
that's it.
So tier two is when you start getting into characters that are interesting. Tier one can give you that kind of idea of like, you're part of the meat grinder. You're not important in the Imperium, you're just in the Imperium. Tier two, these characters matter, at least to some degree. They're not like the strongest, most important characters in the galaxy, but they're at least somebody who like, if they walk down the street, you're going to know that they're different than the rabble around them. The first archetype in this tier being a sister of battle, like a full sister of battle. They're going to have power armor. They're probably going to have a bolter, and they're going to have the fervor in their belief in the God Emperor of Mankind to deny the witch, the mutant, and the heretic.
Tense.
You have a sanctioned psyker. Also, there is like a rogue psyker or an unsanctioned psyker or a chaos psyker that you can do. It's kind of like it's not even like a full archetype. It's literally there's like a section in the back. It's like, if you want to be a psyker but chaos, just make these adjustments. That's about all you do. But you know, tier one, there's no psykers at all. Tier two, you can finally do a little bit of space wizardry if in you're so inclined.
That sounds cool.
A Skitarius. They're kind of like the foot soldiers of the Adeptus Mechanicus. But the AdMech, they're not just like, hey, we're going to slap a flak vest on you, give you a rifle, and say, go get them, champ. They take basic people, and they start removing limbs to replace them with augmetics. They put a computer in your brain so that you can be controlled directly. They will give you a rifle that fires rounds made out of radium to irradiate your opposing enemies, and also yourself very heavily.
Neat.
Skitari, like they're still cannon fodder, but they're kind of better cannon fodder because at least they have augmetics.
How long do they live compared to other cannon fodder? Like by their own design.
That can be highly variable because sometimes, like especially the ones that use the radium carbines, they're probably going to have lower lifespans because a lot of the time it may just be like, all right, you served your purpose. And That's all there is to it. But if you are a particularly valuable Skitarii, they may start replacing those parts that you're losing with more augmetics. They may start giving you more freedom of thought. You may even elevate to a tech priest at some point, if and you happen to be very useful and very smart. So it really comes down to, are you worth putting the time and effort into? And if not, bye-bye.
That's fair.
Now here's three words that Word will like. Death Cult Assassin.
These are in fact three words. They go together nicely. When separate, they don't mean a whole lot. They're okay on their own. Together, they definitely sound true.
You don't mean a whole lot separate? They mean so much separate, too.
Nah, they're not that big of a deal separate. Together, they're a much bigger deal.
You're biased.
Indeed.
I mean,
within the Imperium, there's a lot of these groups are called death cults, and they're basically like a lot of the time they're entire worlds that are dedicated to finding recruits and training the most deadly assassins in the galaxy, and that is their entire purpose. And they have different schools of thought, some of them very specialized heavily in like poisons, some of them are masters of stealth and using blades, some of them are incredibly skilled snipers. It just depends on which one of these death cults you come from. But these are people you do not fuck with. And if you see one coming, you leave. Very quickly. You can be a Tempestus Scion, which is an Imperial Guardsman, but a good one. Instead of being like, hey, I'm random soldier to be thrown into the front lines, you're probably part of like a SWAT team or like a Marine. Not a space marine, but you know, like a marine. A soldier who matters. Take that, army.
Mm-hmm.
A rogue trader, which is somebody who has the writ of trade, basically meaning they can go and do whatever they want. Like, they don't really have any power, per se, but it gives them kind of carte blanche to just kind of do whatever the fuck. But they don't have to follow as many of the Imperium's laws. Like, they can get away with making trades and alliances with Xeno species or mutants or whatever because they're special boys. Be a Scavvy, which is like a ganger, but actually dangerous. Probably have some war gear that matters. You might even be Chaos. Who knows? You could be a Space Marine Scout, which are like the baby Space Marines. They have some of the augmentations, but not all of them yet, and they don't have their power armor yet. They're still kind of superhuman, but they're not all the way there. They're kind of at the last leg of their training. Usually it means that they're trained to be snipers, because that means that they can go out into the battlefield. They're going to be far enough away from the fight to not be in the direct line of fire, because again, they don't have their power armor, so they can't take 50 bolter rounds to the chest and be fine like a full Space Marine can. But they'll still be close enough to get some battle experience. And, you know, help out the rest of the Battle Brothers. It'll be Eldar Ranger, which are... they're pretty bog standard parts of, like, the Eldari armor. They're kind of people who will like go out in like smaller vessels, and they will explore the wider galaxy. They'll handle threats. They do what they can to protect the craft worlds. But while I say that they're kind of bog standard for the Eldar, that matters in the fact that the Eldar in every way, shape, and form are superior to humans. Like, they're kind of like Tolkien's elves, where they're just better than humans. They live longer, they're faster, they can think better. They're just better than humans.
Are those the ones that do the whole, like, killing people sex cult thing?
Yes, they did do that.
Ah, okay. I was thinking correctly then.
Yeah, you're specifically thinking of the Drukhari, but way back when, the entire Eldar race was like, yes, murder cults of sex butt plugs. Listen, you know what's an aphrodisiac? Flaying off all of your skin before intercourse.
Whoa.
Before? I mean, you said a single butt plug. Why not exploding butt plug?
Whoa. Listen, is it really an explosive orgasm if you still have your pelvis afterwards?
Depends how you define explode.
It depends on who wants to do the orgasm and who's the gimp.
Yeah. Certainly
the gimp is a very good image editing program. Take that. I have now killed your joke.
No, you just redirected it into a weird place.
The final archetype in Tier 2 is the Orc Commando. These are the few orcs who do things like use tactics, employ stealth, try and strike an enemy who isn't looking at you while not screaming at the top of your lungs to get their attention. Very un-orky things, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But because of that, very effective. Because they're already like 3 times the size of a human. Why not be sneaky and also stupid strong? But Tier 2, you've got kind of that, again, like you're important, but you're not top of the food chain. You're not the best of the best. But you're also not just a guardsman or just a ganger. You're somebody who is probably going to be part of a more organized unit. Somebody who's going to be sent on missions that actually matter. Mm. If you get sent on missions at all, you're going to be doing things that are important. Again, you're still probably not going to be doing let's save the whole world kind of stuff, but you're going to be performing actually vital tasks to the larger whole, the larger mission of let's save the damn world. Enough that, you know, you failing in your mission would be a major setback.
Mm-hmm.
Tier 3. We start with a full-blown tech priest. These things are dope because they replace so much of their body with machines that you don't even know how much of them is human anymore. And I like that. I like the idea of that. Get rid of my legs and give me robot spider feet.
Praise the Omnissiah.
You want to be a cyborg? That sounds cool.
Get rid of my lungs and replace them with a high-efficiency respirator.
Praise the Omnissiah.
Praise the Omnissiah. You could be an Imperial Crusader. You're a normal human, but your strength, your valor, and your fervor and your worship of the God Emperor of Mankind means that you're actually competent. You get good war gear, you go out there and you spread the good word of the God Emperor with the might of your goddang Thunderhammer. Because if they refuse to believe, they will receive his peace one way or another. See, I'm looking at you, Molly, and you're just like, man, he's still talking, isn't he?
No, I'm listening.
You could be an Imperial Commissar, which, so if you know what a Commissar is,
Commissar.
Like in real life, pretty much the same thing, only they're set to be, like, listen, if the guardsmen show cowardice, we will execute them for the cowardice. If morale is low, we will start killing guardsmen. Until morale is no longer low.
What's this morale? How do you know?
Also, commissar? The only word I know close to that is commissary.
Yeah.
Well, yeah. Commissar comes from that word. Or commissary comes from the word commissar.
What does commissar mean, then?
They were Russian kind of military police. They were meant to, like, go around and find people disparaging Russia during the Soviet Union. And,
I thought that was just the KGB in general.
Commissars. Commissars are a thing. I don't know, like, the explicit definition. That's something.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, okay.
They're basically, like, they're kind of high-ranking officers. They're part of the military, but also separate from the military in a way. You can have a commissar in any wing of the Imperium's military. They can be part of the Imperial Navy. They can be part of the Guard.
Now, how close are they to the law portion of the military?
They make sure that the guardsmen do not desert one way or another.
But what if the guardsmen want ice cream?
Yeah, now you're thinking my kind of
tough titty. You'll get ice cream when you're by the Emperor's side at the Golden Throne after he calls.
What about the Golden Corral?
He's not gonna do that. There's no ice cream. The Imperium does not have ice cream. They don't seem like the kind of people that would ever make any desserts.
They're not fun.
Do you know what the most common food stuff in the Imperium is?
Rations.
Is it sugar?
No.
What is it?
Leather.
Corpse starch.
It could be tasty.
They grind down the dead. They grind down the bodies of their dead, remove the starch, and feed that to their people.
Remove the starch?
Yes.
From corpses?
Yes.
Like potatoes?
Yes.
I don't know if you know this, but bodies aren't really starchy.
They're not. That shows you how fucking insane the Imperium is.
I'm so confused. They just take out the glycogen. It's really funny.
Because all the protein would be used to make higher class meals.
I see. Okay.
There's also, of course, like nutrition bars that are probably like ground up bugs.
I was like, I was about to say bugs would be a better source of like really cheap nutrition if they can like.
Well, the problem is like the highest population centers in the Imperium are Hive Worlds, and Hive Worlds are not necessarily habitable to any other form of life.
And
because they are also massive manufactorums pumping out incredibly high amounts of toxic sludge into the atmosphere. A Hive World basically subsists on things imported from other planets.
I'd be really surprised though if you couldn't raise insects inside of like big glass containers though.
You absolutely could. Doesn't mean they're gonna.
Mm.
I get the Imperium make sense. They don't do things the smart way. They do the things the way that they want to.
I know, like you said, with the replacing human lungs. Lungs are actually extremely good at filtering out things, better than respirators.
The tech priests, the members of the Adeptus Mechanicus, believe that the machine is sacred. That the more of your biological matter that you remove and replace with machine, the closer you are to God.
Ah, so it's religious. Okay, that explains it.
And frankly, I don't disagree.
Depends on the thing.
Put my brain in a robot, dog. Get me there.
Robot dog.
You can be a desperado, which is just somebody who's real dope with guns. And that is the entire tier 3 character. You are so cool with that gun that you have distinguished yourself above the entire Imperial Guard as a mercenary.
Shiny. That must be very difficult to attain if you start from the beginning.
Incredibly so, considering that the next entry on this list is a full tactical space marine.
Mm-hmm.
You are in the same tier as a fully fledged battle brother in power armor.
So, like, how
you gotta
often
be damn good with those guns.
How often does that even happen, considering what you told me about it? So, like, do they work with the Imperium or like
the Desperados?
Yeah, like what niche do they fit into?
I mean, they're going to have to work with the Imperium because, you know, they're human and humans are incredibly xenophobic. And all the other Xenos, all the other alien species, also incredibly xenophobic. It's basically everyone's trying to kill everyone out there.
Ah, so it's like the opposite of Mass Effect.
Pretty much. Like, the exact... They don't have these cool warp gates which allow you to travel faster than light by bending... No, if you want to travel faster than light in 40K, you rip open a hole in reality and you take a nice fucking scenic drive through literal hell.
You just, smoosh things together and then you leave. Just smoosh time and reality.
You open a portal to actual hell. You're mm-hmm. like, listen, you... Space right there, you are an actual gateway into hell itself now. And thank goodness we have these specific kinds of shields, because if we didn't, we would get murdered by demons the instant we set foot in there. And if they go down, we're straight dicked. But hey, this is the fastest form of travel we got.
I mean,
let's all go to hell, everybody.
Like, forming a wrinkle in space-time probably would open up a gate to hell if I had to make any sort of assessment of that.
Pretty faces.
Warlocks. Warlocks are Eldar Psykers, and Eldar Psykers are some of the best damn Psykers. It's in fact hard to be a better Psyker than an Eldar, because every Eldar is an innate Psyker.
Well, you did just say that Eldar are better than humans in every way possible.
Pretty much. They're also all being actively hunted and consumed by Slaanesh. Kind of a bummer.
Well, I mean, they did bring about Slaanesh into the real world because they're terrible.
Big true.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
What'd you get for murder fucking dozens to death?
She can't help it. She's the big guy.
I honestly believe that Slaanesh's pronouns would be they, them, / murder. like murder is one of their pronouns. And the fork verb. Knob is the final thing on the list. So if a boy is a basic orc, a knob is like big orc in charge of all the boys.
That makes sense. And they're fungus, they reproduce asexually. I think hermaphroditically would also work.
Nope, completely asexually. They have plants, spores.
Plants and fungus are weird. Very weird. Yeah, spores can be a form of sexual reproduction.
They can be, but for orcs, they are in fact not. They were literally meant to be a singular species. It's like one strain of fungus that can reproduce at such an extreme rate that once orcs take hold of anywhere they're at, like, they're just there. It's damn near impossible to get rid of orcs and orc infestation from a planet without literally burning the entire planet to ash.
So each spore is a clone?
Basically, yeah.
Okay.
There's like a whole thing to the orc life cycle. And
or do you think they polyp?
They might actually. There's like a whole thing. Like their life cycle, like it starts with the snots, I believe, and they just kind of come out of the ground and they start preparing the way, spreading some more spores, and then once there's a high enough population of those, you get the Gretchens or the Grots, as well as some squigs. And both of those, like the Grots are there to kind of like herd the squigs and do like menial chores around orc encampment. But they are also food. Like squigs and Grots are food to the bigger orcs. And then at that point, you'll start getting some boys. And then the way that orcs work is like they are constantly growing. They never stop growing. And the more violent they are and the more victorious they are in combat, the faster they grow and the bigger they get. So an orc boy could be the same size roughly for about 6 months, and then he will clobber another orc over the head, and then he'll grow 3 inches overnight.
I don't know why, but that really reminds me of Dead Space. Not like 100%, but like a little bit.
So it's like the more orcs that get together, and the larger their presence is, it kind of then begins propagating this variation among them in order to fulfill specific niches. So like, you get enough orcs, and then now you've got the mech boys, and they can start building rudimentary machines. And now you've got the weird boys, and they can start doing some psychic stuff. And then now you've got a war boss, and he's going to start leading raids, and they're going to start taking stuff from the Yumis. And then more orcs are going to happen. Like, every orc that dies also shoots clouds of spores into the air. And then that's going to mean more orcs. Like, they're impossible to get rid of. And the way orc technology works is, like, literally, if enough orcs believe something works, then it just does. That's so the way they literally.
You said that they fill in niches. Do they, like, mutate really quickly if they go to a new planet and are starting to populate it or something? Or do they, like, terraform the planet? You know what I mean?
They'll terraform it to some extent where, like, the whole planet will basically get covered in their fungus. But, yeah. Like.
Because those are, like, orcs, the two options, like. Either I change or it changes.
Orcs do have some ability to like change their externals to match their environment. There are some places that are just going to be too hostile for orcs to live in. Like, they're not going to live in a world that's entirely volcanic, because that's just going to kill organic matter no matter what. But like, you know, once they start needing machines, then the mech boys show up. Once they start needing doctors, well, that's when the docs show up. And the more of them there are, the better they get at the things that they do. And that's mostly because they believe that the things they do should work rather than by actually getting better at it. They literally just have the force of belief. And any knowledge that they do have, like things that are basically like the basic baseline requirement for physics to even be able to bend to what you're doing, if they actually need that knowledge, it will just blam. It's there in their head now because they've reached that critical mass of this is a level of technology we should be at. The more orcs there are, the more advanced their society is.
What's the most advanced orc society?
Currently, it's Ghazghul Mag Uruk Thraka's massive, we're going to take over the entire galaxy level WOG. They have spaceships on par with some of the Imperium ships, where they can probably start performing Exterminatus level assaults. They just don't do that because it's incredibly boring. Orcs love to fight. If they are not fighting, then what the fuck is even the point? But there's some rumors that they're going to reach the critical mass. So the orcs are actually a devolution of a race that the old ones made called Krorks, which were like tens of billions of orcs that are all on the level of actual fucking space marines. And if they come back, everyone's fucked.
Like, is the Imperium actively trying to prevent the critical mass of the orcs from reaching that point? Because I can only assume, based on what you said, that if they reach a certain point in mass, they will bring back the old ones.
Yep. And yeah, the Imperium's fucking trying. They're not having a whole lot of success, but fuck are they trying. There was actually a recent fight between the Space Marines, the Space Wolves' great company leader, Ragnar Blackmane, and Ghazghul Thraka himself. And I don't think it went well for either one of them. I think they both kind of got the shit beat out of them. And that's because Ghazghul Thraka at this point is fucking massive. Like, if you look at his model, he's got like missile launchers and like Gatling guns strapped to him. Like, he is just a walking weapons platform.
That sounds heavy.
Part of the reason he's been so successful is he is like the only super religious orc as well. They have their own gods known as Gork and Mork, being cunningly brutal and brutally cunning, respectively.
And, he's the only most religious one? I'm surprised.
Like, there's like that general like idea of like the orc gods are Gork and Mork, but Ghazghul Thraka evangelizes. If you are an orc who refuses to worship Gork and Mork outwardly, he'll crump you, lad.
Well,
he'll smash your teeth right in.
Why would they refuse to if they believe in them so fervently?
It's not even that they would refuse. It's that you're not being pious enough for him.
You also, he'll murder the shit out of you. The way that you described them made them sound like they have a hive mind. So
they don't. They don't have a hive mind.
That's really interesting.
They are, in fact, incredibly stupid. There is a hive mind entity in 40K. That is the Tyranids, but they're not part of it.
That's really weird, considering you said that they're all clones, basically. That they're like a fungus, that they wouldn't share thoughts in some form.
No. But what they do have is they have this large field of psychic energy collectively among them that's called the WOG energy. And they all kind of draw off of that. They're not all genetically identical, but they're close enough to it. That, like, any human is not going to be able to tell one orc from another unless they have some big distinguishing thing, like how Ghazghul Thraka is, like, 20 feet tall and made out of guns.
They sort of sound more like a virus.
Well, they're a fungus.
What was I going to say? Is the psychic energy a result of their biology, or is it one of the things that they believe and it's coming true?
It's something about the way that they were made by the old ones, and they were meant to not use warp energy. That's where all the other psychic stuff in the galaxy comes from, is people have this connection to the Immaterium, the warp. And in times past, that wasn't so bad. You could draw upon the Immaterium and use this energy to manifest your will in real space. But now the warp is full of demons and is literal actual hell, and touching it in any way, shape, or form can kill the shit out of you. So the old ones use the orcs as the Krorks, rather, and their WOG energy as a means of manifesting these psychic abilities without needing to interact with the warp in any way.
Mm-hmm.
And that generally means that they will find a weird boy, tie him to a stick, poke him until he has a panic attack, point him in the direction of the enemies, and then he will vomit WOG energy at them.
That sucks.
It's like a gun. Living gun.
Pretty much. So tier 3 stuff, like these can get to the point of, like, we're going to save the world. We're going to make sure this planet lives. You've got actual fucking space marines in these squads.
Mm-hmm.
You've got tech priests and crusaders and Eldar warlocks. You've got Imperial commissars. You've got people who have names who are recognizable and important within the Imperium. If not recognized among the entire Imperium as a whole, at least within a sector, there's somebody who is important. There's somebody who has a name. There's somebody who, if shit hits the fan, we're calling this person. These are the people fighting demons. These are the people called for whenever the Tyranids show up. These are the people you call whenever the Ghost Ghost Butters.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever, the Ghostbusters won't cut it. You call in these people.
HR.
They're important. They're gonna start. You're gonna start seeing some very, very high level enemies like this. This is like a, you get to the end of your campaign and you will actually fight like a demon prince, like a Lord of Change or something. These people matter. They're important. Tier 4 is the final tier. And this is the, I don't know if they call it second edition. This was at least a massive revision of Wrath and Glory the way it was originally, because there used to be 5 tiers, but they lowered it to only 4. And tier 4 only has 2 archetypes in it at its base. That is an Inquisitor and a Primaris Intercessor. And these are both very powerful kinds of characters. An Inquisitor is somebody who can go anywhere, do anything, and has absolute authority amongst the Imperium. And a Primaris Intercessor is the strongest basic level Space Marine. Like, they do not have any kind of specialization. You can send them into any situation, and you can have pretty solid confidence that they're going to make whatever problem it is go the hell away.
That's funny.
Primaris Marines are nothing to fucking sneeze at. Like, they're like the best and brightest in the Imperium, basically just being a step down from the Adeptus Custodes at this point.
Custodes.
Mm-hmm. And these are the kind of things, like, listen, there is a demon incursion, there is a chaos champion on this planet, deal with it. That's the kind of level of shit that you're going to expect at Tier 4. At Tier 4, it's like, you're not even going to be saving the world. You're probably going to be saving 2 or 3, if not an entire sector, with what's going on. That's the level of importance that these characters have. Now, I do specifically say that these are the base archetypes because, A, there are a few points in the books where it says, hey, if you want to play this, but you want to be chaos or whatever, it's going to give you some steps to follow to just modify an archetype that's already there and make it chaos or something to that degree. But there is also ascension and advancements. So as you finish campaigns or even start new ones, mm-hmm. say you want to be in a tier 3 game, but you really want to be a Sister of Battle. You want to be a distinguished Sister of Battle. You can take that tier 2 archetype of mm-hmm. a Sister of Battle, you build the entire character, and then you apply an ascension to it. And an ascension can be something like you have an incredibly powerful benefactor who may require things of you, but you're going to have more prestige, you're going to have better war gear, or it could be something like you have awakened as a latent psyker. And maybe you don't necessarily have all the training you need now, but you're a psyker now. So you have that full tier 2 archetype, but now you also have access to psychic powers. So you can take these tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 characters and ascend them, give them advancements to create a higher tier version of that same archetype, if that is really what you want to play.
Ooh.
I think that's good stuff.
Ooh.
Oh, yeah, baby.
Crazy.
Hold on, that's just so nuts. I need to sing this song.
Do you need something from me? Mr. Constantly Sings.
I do sing a lot. But that's actually, like, we're well past our time for this week, but I was getting into it. I really love 40K.
Yeah.
Anybody have any final thoughts, final questions?
Oh, there's so much death.
That is true.
Finger guns. Okay.
Grimdark, 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 Grimdark. That is 40K.
It's pretty tasty.
Lemignon is pretty tasty, but I like sirloin the best.
All right, Grandpa, let's get your meds and get you back to bed. Are there any questions, thoughts, anything we want to end off on before I roll this D20?
Fungus is among us.
Thank you.
True. There, mm-hmm. One of my favorite things is, like, there's a planet that is like a primary recruiting world for the Imperial Guard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it says there's like something like 60 billion guardsmen on that planet.
Mm-hmm.
And it's come to like, there's a bit of an inside joke where it's like, it's not even a planet. It's literally just a ball of guardsmen marching around their sun in orbit for the great glory of the God Emperor of Mankind. And there's still orcs on that planet. There is still an orc presence on that world.
fucking like it.
You they can't get so rid of many orcs. Guardsmen once on they're there, planet, they're there.
What are they guarding? It seems like a poor distribution of resources.
And yet there's still orcs. There are still orcs.
Got plenty of grog.
So,
they got to.
So we are on Facebook.com/D20Dudes. Twitter.com/D20Dudes or @D20Dudes on Twitter if you want to find us there. And we have a Discord link down in the description. The Discord is open to everyone if you want to come disparage me personally. Always open for that. And we are going to roll this beautiful bean footage and see what next week's episode is going to be about. Oh, gosh. Hold on. One of these days it'll stay on the table. Everything's going poorly. I have rolled a 3. Oh, boy. Do you take a guess what we're talking about?
Video games.
Is it also 40K?
It is not also 40K. Word was actually quite close.
I can't even see your sheet. Please tell me.
We're gonna be talking about Dwarf Fortress.
Is there a tabletop version of it?
There is not, but I believe so. There's games like Dwarf Fortress and RimWorld and a lot of these other colony management simulation kind of games that I believe are very important for the ideas behind running tabletop role playing games, especially whenever you're building settlements and stuff. Because what these games do are very quickly generate stories. They give you environments. They give you important NPCs. They give you details without you having to really put in a whole lot of work yourself.
And I also give a shout out to a newer colony sim game called Going Medieval. It would do the same thing.
Yeah, it's a lot of those games are based off of War Fortress. And kind of the precedent it set. Dwarf Fortress and its steam. That game is so amazing. I have so many Dwarf Fortress tales, I can tell.
What was the very first colony sim?
Pretty sure it was Dwarf Fortress. That game came out like 1999, 2000.
Oh, really? Oh.
Yeah. I mean, it's been around for a hot minute. It's been made by like two dudes the whole time.
Hmm.
Game's amazing. Anyway, thank you all for listening to this week's episode. We will catch you in the next one. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Fling it.